Leading Ideas Talks is brought to you by the Lewis Center for Church Leadership of Wesley Theological Seminary in Washington, D.C. Subscribe free to our weekly newsletter at www.churchleadership.com/leading ideas. Really, how can we reach millennials? In this episode, Lewis Center Director F. Douglas Poe Jr. speaks with the Reverend Dr. Joshua Mitchell about connecting with millennials.
Welcome to Leading Ideas Talks, a podcast featuring thought leaders and innovative practitioners. I am Douglas Poe, the director of the Lewis Center, and your host for this talk. Joining me is the Reverend Dr. Joshua Mitchell, who serves as the minister of youth and college students at Wheeler Avenue Baptist Church in Houston, Texas. He's the author of Black Millennials and the Church. Our focus for this podcast is connecting with millennials. Welcome, Joshua, to this podcast. We're excited to be talking with you today. And we want to begin by asking, what are you reading now or have you read recently that is influencing your thinking about leadership?
Well, first of all, thank you, Dr. Poe, for the opportunity to be a part of the podcast. It is an honor for me as I call it an electronic student of your work. And so this is a joy for me. I'm actually currently going through two books. One is The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen R. Covey, or Covey, which has been a blessing to me. A mentor of mine passed that to me very recently. And so one of the pieces of the book that is helping me the most is this idea of beginning with the end in mind, where we sort of begin our journey as leaders with what is the end result, and then reverse engineering your plan based on where you ultimately want to be. And to that end, I'm also reading a book called Next, Pastoral Succession That Works. It is written by William Vander Blomen and Warren Bird, and it talks about pastoral succession from various denominations and various perspectives, and it was also recommended to me by a mentor. And one of the concepts that I think is so important in the book is this idea that we're all interims, whether you're serving as a senior pastor, whether you're serving as a youth pastor. At some point, your work at that particular place in that particular context will end. And so thinking through ways to ensure that your programming is sustainable and that the people are not damaged through whenever that time comes. And so that has been super, super helpful as I seek to figure out ways to fortify the work that I do and the work that the leaders that I work with through the work that we do with digital discipleship begin to think about how we can build our programming and build a plan so that the work goes on no matter what happens to us in our journey.
That was very helpful. And of course, the Seven Habits is a classic. But the book on succession sounds really interesting because I do think that it hits a critical issue today about thinking about it from the perspective of sustainability and not thinking about it from the perspective of sort of building monuments.
Yes.
And how do we make sure that what we're doing is sustainable in a way that although things may change, that the ministry can move forward. Can you share any other insights and things you learned from the book that would be helpful?
Well, there's a part of the book where they talk about the successions that should not have worked but did. And one of the stories that they uplift, well, two, one is Charles Jenkins' story in Chicago. Here's a guy who was in school and was having death threats at the time of his transition, and thought that, you know, he was too young and all this good stuff. And so that story was very interesting to me. I know him as the singer. I didn't know sort of about that transition and how that came to be. And even Joel Osteen's story that is highlighted in the book, where he was a guy who was working for his father in the media ministry, that really did not want to be in front of the camera, did not want to be on stage to preach, and how that succession works. So I think the beauty of the book is the stories that are told, even from high profile, I guess you could say, ministers, that maybe you wouldn't hear some of these details too often. I think it's been a blessing to me. But I also appreciate that the authors push this idea that it's not just for senior pastors. I'm not currently a senior pastor, but for anybody who is serving in leadership, sustainability, as you said, Dr. Poe, is so important. And what I've seen from the youth work that I've done in young adult ministries around the country, you know, we've become as a culture so personality driven that when that personality steps away, or as they talk about in the book, if you get hit by a bus, what happens? Who leads the next day? In what areas? Who does Bible study? Who's responsible for the programming? Do you have an emergency plan in place? And I'd never thought to do that, even in my own work as a youth pastor in Houston. And so it has helped me to think through those ideas and challenge me to speak to those that I love, who are in ministry in various different capacities, about these, not just the emergency plan, but beginning with the end in mind. At some point, that time, that season will come to a close. And how do we equip the churches that we serve or the nonprofits that we serve, whenever that may be? So yeah, that is, it's been a blessing to me.
That's very helpful. I want to jump into your book, which is a wonderful resource, and I hope that listeners will pick it up, Black Millennials in the Church. And in the book, I was fascinated. You talk about two types of grief in the book. The first is sort of conventional grief, which is what we experience when loss occurs, and most people are familiar with that sort of grief. But then you talk about the second type of grief. The second is anticipatory grief. Can you share more about this idea of anticipatory grief with our listeners?
Absolutely. So the definition I use is that anticipatory grief is mourning that occurs when a family is expecting a death. I served as a chaplain for about 2 years, and I would see this often. There's this process of mourning when you know that something is coming. You see all of the signs, and before they actually close their eyes and depart, you begin that process of grieving. And I believe that churches throughout this nation are going through seasons of anticipatory grief, where we see the signs, just as we might see in the hospital bed. We see the signs. I think there's a wonderful resource that I'll mention later in the podcast. That as we look at our churches, as we look at the systems, as we look at attendance or whatever metric by which we use to measure the effectiveness of our churches, we see those things and we begin to grieve. The churches that at one point were booming and bustling and full of life and committed to the community, we see declining and membership not coming and financial troubles and disconnect with the communities that we were in. At one point, they were a certain demographic was a part of this community, and now that demographic is gone, and the church doesn't know where it fits. And so we see this process of grief happening because there's this feeling that our church is maybe dying and that it is declining. And we don't know what to do with that. And so that is sort of where I start the book, to begin this process of talking through what we can do to bring new life, particularly for churches that are interested in reaching this generation of millennials.
And sticking with this theme for a little bit, as you talk about this idea of anticipatory grief, and you just connected it to millennials, do you think that congregations sort of fall into this way of thinking because they feel like it insulates them or protects them in sort of a strange way? So if I start grieving now, then when I actually get to the point of death, it won't feel so bad. Do you think that's the mindset? Or do you think something else is behind why people sort of are anticipating the death of their congregations?
Well, I think that there's a lot of denial within our congregations. We know for those that read and sort of study church patterns, we know that there are a lot of church trends that point to the death of many of our local congregations. We know that the megachurch movement is coming to an end, and that we won't see sort of these monuments, as we said earlier in the podcast, continuing to pop up as frequently. We know, as we see in attendance, that less and less millennials, and this is across the board, are engaged in local bodies and local congregations. But I think that there are those who don't believe that their church, their congregation will be a part of that group that will close their doors, though we know that hundreds of churches close their doors each month. So I see a lot of that this isn't really us. And so the anticipatory grief, even as I do my consulting work, isn't even happening on a senior pastor level all the time. Sometimes it's those leaders or those staffers inside, and they see what's happening and see that there's a need for a change, and they're anticipating the decline where those that are in maybe higher level leadership don't even see yet that their church is happening. So I see that as one dynamic. But then I do think that there are some who see that the church needs a change. Maybe it's not on its deathbed, but is sick and in a hospital state, and begin this grief process, knowing that it's a possibility. So I think it's a little bit of both. When I talk to churches and talk to church leaders, part of it is I see a denial that our church, you know, we're okay, we'll be fine, without any consideration to maybe the ways that we need to rethink our practices, our programming, our models for ministry. And then there are a few in-house who are anticipating, because they can see 20 years from now, this isn't going to work. Maybe 10, maybe 5 years from now, this isn't going to work. And then on the other side, I do think it's a bit of what you've said, Dr. Poe, that there are those who can see it coming and maybe begin that grief process now, so that when we close the door of the church, it doesn't hurt as bad as you said.
All right. Well, let's move on to more positive parts. You talk about the challenge of many African-American congregations knowing little or nothing about Black millennials.
Yes, sir.
And I'm wondering, how can not only African-Americans, but all congregations learn more about millennials? And I'm thinking of, do you have maybe three things you can suggest, or three questions that would actually help congregations do a better job of actually engaging millennials in a more substantial way?
I think that's a great question. Maybe three ideas. So I think one thing, one idea would first be to poll the ones that you have. I very rarely do I speak to churches that have no millennials that are a part of the congregation. Now, by and large, I see churches that have few, but normally there's one that's hanging out there. And I think it's important to have conversation with them. Why are you here? What draws you to the church community? Are you here because you're being forced to come? If it's a younger millennial, they may not have a choice. They may be coming with grandma or whatever the case may be. But what keeps you here? What keeps you invested in the church community? And asking what is important to you? What are some of the issues that are prevalent in your life right now? What are some of the faith aspects and some of the discipleship aspects that you have questions about? You know, I think that we don't utilize our human resources enough when it comes to this dilemma about Black millennials and the church and discipleship. And so sitting down and actually having a conversation and asking why do those who are in your friend group, maybe family members that are the same age group, why don't they come? Why don't they participate in the life of the church? And I think that you will hear, because I think that Black millennials, and I am one, are pretty honest and upfront about what our challenges are. And so I think beginning with who you have and creating safe space where they can talk and not feeling the need to defend what your church does and what your programming already is. I think that one of the greatest barriers to change and progress is that we always feel the need to defend, because we love our organizations, we love our church, we love our parishes, and we think that they are great, and we pour into them because we think that they are great, and they are. But I think sometimes it takes a bit of discipline to just sit and listen and hear, even when it hurts our feelings, what it is, how it is that the millennials see this church, what their challenges are, and where they are asking for us to invest in. So I think utilizing the ones that you have.
Let me just interrupt for a second. Sorry. Before you go to the other two, I'm sure you have talked about this idea with other congregations, or even talked about it with other millennials. What are some of the responses you've heard from millennials of why their friends don't come to church?
So Adam Hamilton has a wonderful book called When Christians Get It Wrong. And his first part of why Christians get it wrong is unchristian Christians. And so that tends to be at the top of the list, that there is a certain hypocrisy that millennials see around church people. And they are turned off not by the Christ of the church, but by the Christians that the church produces. They are turned off by a perceived disingenuous nature. They are turned off by a lack of warm welcome by communities of faith and people within that community of faith, by sort of some of the gossip that goes on, sort of the judgmental nature that they feel. This is a generation that will come as they are. And so we'll show up with a hairdo that maybe isn't the way that that Mother Thomas would want. We'll show up with earrings in our ear and our nose and other places. We'll show up with friends that don't look like classic church attendees. And so there's this sense of judgment, I think, that a lot of millennials feel when they enter our spaces. So that's a part of it. Then, as I often say, particularly with congregations who don't have a lot of millennials, millennials want to be around other millennials, young adults, which is primarily what millennials are at this stage. Young adults want to be in spaces where they are around other young adults. And you can't necessarily manufacture new young adults if you don't have them. But I do think that churches have to consider collaboration with congregations as well as organizations that already cater to and work with and work through the power of the millennial population. So one is the people that they encounter. Two is wanting to be in spaces where millennials are there, but also are in leadership and are empowered. My sister, Dr. Brianna Parker, speaks a lot about the way that our leadership structures are in our local congregations, and the lack of representation, even in the leadership of our churches, as a turnoff for millennials. Here you have a generation of young people who serve as CEOs and as power players in business on their 9-to-5, but are not trusted to serve as trustees in the church. And that is because of tradition and how we have sort of programmed our church to function. And so I think that's number two. And then number three, in terms of maybe turnoffs and reasons why, has to do with, I would say, some of the operation norms that we have in our church. So is your church service too long?
Yes, are you tarrying for the? Yeah, that's right.
You know, are you tarrying for the Holy Ghost for 4 hours? And I want to tarry until the Holy Ghost speaks. But we are instantaneous culture. We are microwave culture. And we don't have the attention span to give you 4 hours. So is the preaching relevant? Is something that I hear a lot. Is the preaching relevant to what I'm going through? I appreciate what's happening in Habakkuk. But if you can't help me to make sense of what is said in Habakkuk as it relates to what's going on in 2018, what I'm seeing in my community, what I'm seeing amongst my people, then I can't get with that. So the relevance of the word, our worship norms and styles, and I think that if we consider all of these things, and what is the church doing outside of Sunday morning worship, cannot be understated. I have a long section about that in my book, and I talk about that very, very often. If our churches are only places where we come to worship, then you miss this generation. Now, granted, we're in a consumer culture. There are those millennials that come to church and participate in worship because that's what they've done, because that's tradition, or because that's what mama said that they ought to do. But I think churches that are really thriving with millennial participation are churches that are missional, and churches that are going beyond the walls of the church to impact the community for the kingdom of God, but for the good of that community. In Millennials Rising, which is the first, I say the first sustained book on this generation by William Hull and Neil Strauss, they go into this idea that from the very beginning of this generation's inception, they have seen themselves as world changers. And so millennials desire to make change in the world. And if your congregation hasn't thought about ways by which we can impact the world, change the world outside of Sunday morning worship, then you miss a great opportunity to engage millennials for the kingdom.
That was helpful. And I think you probably got your other two ideas in that response.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
I think I said Neil Strauss. I got my people mixed up. It's William Strauss and Neil Ho.
Neil Ho, right.
Authors of yes. Millennial Rising.
I want to talk, and you've referenced it a couple times, a little bit about social media, both positively and negatively influencing millennials in their understanding of church. I think that oftentimes congregations hear about things and they then want to jump on the bandwagon, but they're not really certain how to effectively use the tools, and social media certainly is one of those tools. Can you talk about ways that congregations can actually use social media in a way that could be helpful, but then also some ways that probably are not so helpful for congregations to engage social media?
Absolutely. So I think it's important to remember that social media, like any other technology platform, is a tool. It's a platform. And it can be used for both good and evil, you know, if we want to put it that way. And I start there because I know that there are churches, there are pastors who love social media and think that it is the best thing since sliced bread, and build followings through that platform and swear by it. And there are other pastors and leaders who believe it is the devil. And I have heard that direct quote. Social media is the devil. It has no place in the kingdom. It has no place in our churches. And I want to start by saying it is a platform. It can be used just as money, just as any other technology, television, whatever the case may be, the press, whatever the case may be, for good and evil. It is about how we use it. So ways that we can effectively use social media. I think social media gives us the opportunity to evangelize in a different way. Social media provides, you know, we talk about going out into all the world and making the disciples of the nation. Social media literally gives us the opportunity to expand our reach to the world through the millions and almost to this point, billions of people who are connected through Facebook and through Twitter and Instagram Live and all these sort of platforms. It gives us the opportunity to get our message out. And so I would encourage churches to use that. If you have a strong Bible study, if you have a strong sort of devotional piece, just this morning, my brother, Dr. Sammy Dow, soon to be Dr. Sammy Dow in Marietta, I was on their prayer call through Facebook Live. So that's an opportunity. And I'm in Houston and they're out in Marietta, Georgia. And I'm connected to them in prayer. I can offer my prayer requests through that medium. I think that it offers us an opportunity as a church and in our church programming. So I said Bible study as a way to get that information and that content to people who may not be able to get to your church, may not be able to get to your building. I think that that's a great tool to expand the reach of our church. And I think for pastors and leaders, it's also another way by which our congregants are able to touch us. It is important for congregants to feel connected to their pastors, to their leaders. And in this generation, there's so much movement, so much travel and other things that that leaders and pastors are doing. But this is an opportunity through like I mentioned, a Facebook Live experience where you can come on for 15, 20 minutes. You can you can have conversation with congregants who have questions, who have prayer requests. They can put all of that through the medium of Facebook Live, which is a social media sort of thing. And you can respond right then and there. And you literally are inviting people into your home for about 20 minutes to be a part of that experience. I also think that it is a great way to get the news out about what your church is doing and what your organization is doing. So I am a big proponent of sharing our story, showing our story, not just through the bulletin, but I am a huge proponent of utilizing video to show what your church is doing. And so you can use Instagram, you can use YouTube, you can use live stream to sort of show what your church is doing, not just on Sunday morning, but, you know, just recently we came back for our college tour that we took our students on to Louisiana. And while we were on the bus, I'm putting together our highlight video, if you will, so that I could share via our social media channel what our church is doing with our youth outside. If a picture is worth a thousand words, a video is worth a million. And I think I would encourage churches to use your cell phone. If you don't have a big budget, a video camera, use your cell phone and take video and picture of what you're doing. Share what's going on in your church through the medium of social media.
I'm sorry, I was going to interrupt. And I was going to say, and for those congregations that are older and have may not understand how to do this, this is another way, wouldn't you say, they could connect with millennials who naturally sort of use this technology platform?
Absolutely, absolutely. The name of our company is Digital Discipleships. It's sort of a nod to the idea that millennials are digital natives. They've grown up with this technology and they have developed with the technology. And so I love sort of the idea of intergenerational work one with another. Let the seniors and the young people get together. Let those seniors share some wisdom and let the young people show them how to use their smartphones and to answer their emails and text messages. And I think that makes for great opportunities. I think the danger, though, of social media and some of the ways by which we need to be careful is that it's sort of the concept that I speak to our young people about, and that once stuff is out there, it is out there. And so we've seen countless examples of churches and leaders and pastors who have maybe said some statements that they maybe wish they hadn't said in that way. Or weren't aware that the cameras are on. At this juncture, I think with the way the technology works, we almost have to assume that everything that we are teaching, everything that we are preaching, everything that we are saying is for public consumption, because you don't know who has their smartphone on. You don't know who's recording your message. You don't know who's recording in the meeting. And so it is a call for the church to be very intentional about what we're doing and what we say, because now what we are doing and saying in the local church is really broadcasted in the global sphere. I also want to say that you have to be intentional about your digital landscaping, which is also a part of the church. So we don't just throw things up on social media, but it's important that it's clean, that your website looks good, that it looks up to date. That it's clear on what you're trying to communicate. So the days of long flyers with a lot of words and pictures and all kinds of stuff, I think are ending as it relates to this generation. Is your messaging clear to the point, crisp, and colorful? And there are resources by which churches can do that. One of the resources that we use at Wheeler Avenue that is free, that our social media director, Ms. Alicia Neto, uses very often is something called Canva, canva.com, where they have plenty of templates for social media messaging, for Instagram, Facebook, whatever the case may be. They're all there, and it's free for you to use to create clear messaging, clear graphics, so that you can have good, what I call digital landscaping for your website and for your social media platform.
And just to pick a little bit on the digital landscaping, I think you're sharing an important point, and that is we always think of telling stories through words or through writing, but what you're really talking about is how are we sharing a story with a video, or how are we sharing a story with our social media platform? And I think oftentimes people don't think of it as sharing a story. They simply think, I just put everything up there and I've done my job. But really, we want to think about what is the story I'm trying to share and what's the message I want people to receive.
Absolutely.
Let me, and you talked a little bit about this earlier, in terms of preaching, but what has worked for you in terms of sermon topics and connecting with millennials? I think oftentimes people are seeking ways to be relevant when it comes to preaching or sermons with millennials, but they're not certain how to do it. So what are some clues or some ideas that you can give to others about what may be relevant, or even better, how do they make sure they continue to be relevant? Because what you share today, 3 months from now, may no longer be relevant.
Absolutely. And to that point, so I was just in a meeting yesterday, and we were talking through what we wanted to do for our youth revival over the summer, and we were going through some of the you know, what topics can we do, what songs are hot, all this kind of stuff. And we came to that place that even if we pick something that is hot today, in 3 months, in 4 months, when the actual revival is scheduled for, it may not be relevant. And so I think part of what we have to do is get to a place where we're comfortable with not trying to be catchy in terms of utilizing songs and all that. There's a place for that, most certainly, and I'll come back to that. But what's more important is to get to the heart of what's important to this generation, and that can be communicated without linking it to the hottest movie, the hottest song, the hottest rapper. But there are some key things, some key themes that are important to this generation, and important to this life stage, because as I mentioned, at this point, millennials are, except for one year, based on the time frames that I use, they're all young adults or becoming older adults. And so what is important for young adults? What's important for young adults? Relationships, relationship with God, hearing from God. How do I discern God's purpose for me, God's plan for me, my purpose in this life is important. How do I navigate relationships? I may want a spouse. I may not want a spouse. How do I navigate my relationship with friends? What does it look like, particularly in my work, millennials of color? What is it? Where do I find myself? You know, we saw Black Panther and how important representation was in the movie of Black heroes and Black strong Black women. Where do we see that reflected in the biblical text and in this religion that I've inherited? So I think that when we start looking at those things, whether you tie it to a hot song or a hot video or whatever is out, I think you are able to be relevant to what's going on, what's happening in the world as it relates to social justice issues, as it relates to police brutality, as it relates to the isms and all of their forms. I think when we address these topics head on, whether we have a nice gimmick, and I don't use that to be disrespectful, but whether we have a nice hook to it or not, I think we'll always have the opportunity to be relevant. Now, that being said, I think it pays to be quick on your feet as it relates to preaching and teaching millennials. Damien Durr is one of the, he works at Friendship West Baptist Church in Dallas, Texas. He's one of the brothers that got me thinking around this idea of doing listening parties. So we will, for our college Bible study, if the new album comes out, the new Kendrick Lamar, I'm going to take about a week to digest that album, and then we may do a series around it. We see people doing series around Black Panther, but you have to do those pretty quickly. If you're going to do sort of a topical thing, you have to do those pretty quickly, which is why I suggest, even beyond the topical things, going to the heart of what's important to this generation. I think some of those things I've already mentioned will ensure that you're relevant in your preaching, relevant in your teaching. Now, as it relates to preaching, I think one thing that is important to remember is that this is considered to be the most unreligious generation in American history. And so there are assumptions that we take into the pulpit and that we take into our teaching that we have to be careful about when we're seeking to engage millennials. The old preacher would say back in the day, you know David, you know the story of David, you know old Adam and Eve, you know Noah. And the truth is that a lot of this generation does not. Some of the stories that I took for granted learning in Sunday school as a young child in Rising Sun Baptist Church in D.C. when I was growing up, a lot of these millennials do not know these stories. And so with the biblical illiteracy that we see, it is so important for the preacher, for the leader, to truly understand what the story is, so that they can communicate it in a way that somebody who's never been introduced to Noah, never been introduced to something as foundational as Adam and Eve, doesn't know who Paul is, doesn't know who the children of Israel are, how to make those connections to what's happening in our world today, so that you can explain it to a generation that didn't grow up with a Bible in their hand or being forced to learn and understand these stories.
And Reverend Mitra, as we come to sort of the end here, I always like to end with this sort of question. And you sort of talked about this in the first question, but who has been a mentor for you in terms of leadership and the work you are doing today?
I've been blessed with several mentors as it relates to leadership in the church. And I will try to be brief and break down. Of course, my current pastor, Reverend Dr. Marcus D. Cosby, has sort of shown me the importance of being intentional and being intergenerational, not just as a congregation, but also as a staff, as a team. And so our staff has persons as young as in their 20s to as old as 70s. And we all sit around the table to make decisions one with another. So I appreciate the leadership of Dr. Cosby and sort of teaching me the value of an intergenerational team to create an intentionally intergenerational congregation and family. Mentors for work in the community, persons like Dr. Joe Daniels in Washington, D.C.'s pastor of Emory Fellowship, Dr. Rudy Rasmus, soon to be Dr. Rudy Rasmus here in Houston, Texas, who have shown me the importance of your church being in your organization, meaning something not just in the worship experience, but in the community. And so I love what Rudy Rasmus is doing as it relates to the homelessness in Houston, Texas, that if their doors of the church close, the community will miss them for not being there. And then sort of in the work of millennial work, so the mentors in that work, of course, like I said, electronically, Dr. Poe, I think, your piece on new wine, new wineskins was revolutionary. In terms of speaking to this need to get out of traditional spaces and to create new spaces, new wineskins by which we engage this next generation. My sister, Dr. Brianna Parker, who is the curator of Black Millennial Cafe, was really the one that got me back into school and at STVU, and also into this millennial work. And it was our desire to sort of to get ahead of the game and really study it and be able to be a resource to other people. So so many mentors in my leadership journey. Reverend Linda Diane Stevens, who I served for 3 years in Virginia, Richmond, Virginia, taught me the importance of prayer and how to have the heart of a pastor in serving people in congregational care and pastoral care. So many to name. My own father, who is still my pastor, and my biggest mentor. All of those have played a part in my development as a leader.
Well, thank you and appreciate your taking the time. This has been wonderful and exciting. It was a really good conversation.
Thank you so much, Dr. Poe. I appreciate this.
Leading Ideas Talks has been brought to you by the new Welcome Video Toolkit. Learn concepts and strategies to welcome and respond to your first time and repeat visitors, reach younger generations, expand your church's entry points, and get new people involved. The new Welcome is available on download and DVD at churchleadership.com/newwelcome. On our next episode of Leading Ideas Talks, Lewis Center Associate Director Anne A. Michael speaks with Ginger Gaines-Sorelli, pastor of Foundry United Methodist Church in downtown Washington, D.C., about the concept of sacred resistance.
I think I would say that sacred resistance is a stance, it's a way of being, not just something that you do. And it's about standing for God's way in the face of all that is not God's way.
Leading Ideas Talks is available on iTunes, the Google Play Store, and Stitcher. Subscribe today. Thank you for joining us, and don't forget to subscribe free to Leading Ideas at churchleadership.com/leadingideas.